This is just a clock. Okay. Let's start with the meditation. Well, actually, we should start with it. If you don't know these prayers, maybe we could get them a copy from the book. Start with the meditation. Sit up straight. If you're sitting near an air conditioner, can you turn it off? Just during the meditation, and then it's your duty to turn it back on. Okay. Please come to your breath. Watch your breath. Please ask your heart teacher to come to this place. If you haven't found them yet, picture an ideal teacher.
can bow down to your teacher by thinking of one quality they have that you would like to have. The reason we go to a teacher is because we believe that they have something that we would like to be. So bring to mind the one quality about your teacher that you most admire, your heart teacher. Make an offering to your teacher. The best offering is the offering of your practice, which may not refer so much to your meditation, but to maybe reconciling with the person you have a problem with. Offer your teacher the sweetest thing you've done in the last few days. Then clean your conscience before we meditate. Think of the most negative thing you've thought or said or done in the last few days. And tell it to your teacher openly. Make a decision to try not to do it again, at least for a few days. Think of the best thing you've done in the last few days. Tell your teacher and be happy. You see that they're happy. about something you saw someone else do which is inspiring the last few days, and celebrate that. Ask your teacher to teach you. Put into mind something I'd like to think of, something I'd like to be by tonight. Maybe some change in my feelings, maybe more cheerful, more understanding of other people. Then ask your teacher to help you become that. Ask your teacher to stay with you today, throughout the day, seen or unseen, and guide us, protect us. Back to your breath. And we'll do a very short meditation called the present moment, staying in the present moment. First, I'd like you to remove a small part of your mind. Take a small part of your mind away from your mind. Step back. I like to step physically back, a little tiny piece of my mind steps back. And then that little piece in my mind, which I imagine in the back of my skull, is going to watch the rest of my mind. And then just observe your mind this morning. What's your mind thinking? We're just starting a retreat. The mind will be a little unsettled. It's a new environment. You don't have your usual fridge and iPhone and iPod. And step back, observe the state of your mind. Try to observe what kind of thoughts are coming up. What are you thinking about? Watch the mind thinking the thoughts. Don't be in the thoughts. Watch the mind thinking the thoughts from a distance. one more time. Watch the thoughts in your mind. Watch your mind thinking those thoughts. And I'd like you to observe for just a minute, 2 minutes. Are those thoughts about what's going to happen today or tonight or tomorrow, next week? Or are those thoughts about the past? How you got here? What work you didn't finish? What somebody said to you last month? Or are those thoughts about the present? So check the thoughts. Are they past, future, or present? What's the theme? There might be a mixture, but what's the main? What kind of thoughts take the most time in your mind in the next few minutes? Past, present, or future? Just observe. Don't try to control. Back again. Now I'd like it to, I like to think of it as a wall, like I guess that's what a firewall is. There's a wall in front of my forehead or in the front of my skull, which is clear. It's like an energy field or a wall, and that wall is going to block any thoughts of the future, meaning even later this morning or tonight or next year, any thought about the future will be blocked by the wall. I can still think about the past, or I can be in this present room, but at all costs I must not think about the future. Watch your thoughts. Watch your mind thinking your thoughts, and for the first time try to control those thoughts. Don't allow any thoughts beyond now. Now a second wall behind your mind, a clear wall that blocks any thoughts of the past, last night, leaving your home, or what your boss said to you last week, or what your partner said to you the week before, or what your ex-partner said to you last year. All thoughts of the past are blocked. All thoughts of the future are blocked. Settle in to this room, the present moment of our life, and surrender to this present moment. Block when you start to think of something after this moment, block it. When you start to think of something that happened before this moment, block it. Relax into the relief of being in the present moment. No worries, no expectations. And ask your teacher who's in front of you, ask them to come into your heart, park in your heart for the day, for eternity. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes, stretch a little bit. So I'd like to, can you hear okay? It's all right? Can you hear?
Yeah. I can hear you.
Turn it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Better? Anybody cannot hear? Can hear. It's all right? Okay. So first of all, I'd like to thank you for coming. I know some of you traveled a long way. Singapore, London, South America, Russia, Hong Kong. Good to have you here. Oh, buddy. And for me, it's very nice. We travel a lot. We're almost constantly traveling, and so this 10 days is sort of a rest for us also, and we get to sort of slow down and look at our life, think about our life, and it's nice to have brothers and sisters from every part of the world to do it with, so it's very pleasant for me. I used to come to Prescott when I was a kid to some kind of camp, church camp.
It's not far from here. Just the whole place is to me very beautiful, and it means a lot to me. So I'm glad that you came, and I'm glad that we can be together. So this is part of a larger course. I spent about 7 years in New York teaching the Geshe course, which is the ACI courses. So those are 18 courses, and those are done. And now people are passing them on to other people. And then we spent 7 years at Diamond Mountain doing the Tantric courses, the secret teachings. And we did a good job on that, and miraculously we got through it. There's 20,000 pages of translation for those 14 years. And it's good, and it's really, you know, it's something you can pass on to other people. It's all finished. Then I thought it would be nice to give a transmission of this text. This is a text that was spoken by my teacher's teacher, Pamoka Rinpoche. Then he gave this teaching, I think it was 1921, and he gave this teaching for 24 days in Lhasa. And then one of the monks in the audience was Trigyar Rinpoche, the young Trigyar Rinpoche. He was 20 at the time. But his lama, Pabokha Rinpoche, asked him to take notes. And he did. And you're talking, you know, by hand. He took very good notes. And then his lama asked him to organize, you know, to make a book out of the notes. And then I think he spent 20 years on making this text, okay? And I think Trigyar Rinpoche was the greatest poet and writer of modern times in Tibet. So he took those transcripts, and they came out as a piece of, I think the highest piece of literature ever written. It's extraordinary. It will never be matched. The Tibetan is now becoming a lost language. And it's exquisite. Just as a piece of literature, it's exquisite. On top of that, it's like the most meaningful piece of literature ever written. So I thought, my teacher taught it to us three times. Twice in New Jersey and once in Washington, D.C. So I was lucky because I was his driver and his cook and his laundry man and his recalcitrant gardener. I hated it. Anyway. So I got to hear all three. So I thought it would be, they say in Tibetan, Shindu Pangba means, it would be a shame if I didn't pass it on. The oral lineage. So I thought, let's do that next, you know? So that's like the third cycle of teachings. And that will take 10 years. That will take about 10 years. We'll go through this book. And then I thought for dessert we would do the emptiness and meditation section from Jetsokapa's Great Longing, which is another 500 pages. Which is probably the greatest presentation of emptiness and meditation ever. And that will be dessert at the end. So the whole thing will take, I'm saying 10 years, maybe a little longer, I don't know. So this is the second of 20 or more installments, okay? We did the meditation and the emptiness part first already from this book. Because we thought when we went back and started from the beginning, we would have that tool, those tools, with which to practice the rest of the teaching. And so we'll, now we're going from the beginning. What I'm hoping to do is like a session in Phoenix of 10 days twice a year, followed by a session in Prescott twice a year. This is more of a silent retreat, which will start on Sunday, the silent part. And then, so you get 10 days of instruction in Phoenix twice a year. And then twice a year we come here to, what do you call it, digest it and try to put it into practice. The way it's working out is that 10 days in Phoenix is not enough for me to cover all the materials. So we'll cover half of the new material here. So I'll be giving teachings, and then we'll be meditating on those, on the subjects. Okay? And that's the way it's going to be. There are homeworks in your notebook. I encourage you to do them. Where's Nicole? You're set up for
yeah.
Checking them and all that. Okay. Okay. So unusual. It's kind of unusual that I actually finished the homeworks mostly. And so when we get to the new stuff, which is I think on Tuesday, you'll start doing the homeworks also. If you want to, you know, do the course efficiently, I'll also start printing out the homeworks for the first 5 classes, which were done in Phoenix earlier. And I'll review those classes here. So if you didn't get to Phoenix or you didn't do the online thing, you could do the first 5 homeworks now here. Okay? And then by the end of the 10 days, you have finished this course. Okay? So 5 homeworks from before, which I'll cover a little faster here. And then we'll slow down and cover the 5 classes that we haven't done yet. Okay. Why to finish the course? You know, why should you finish the course? Why should you do all the homeworks and all that? We went to Eastern Europe just 2 weeks ago. We went to Detroit first to warm up. And it was good. Pete was there. Where are you? Yeah. He's one of the gang leaders there. And then we got invited to Bulgaria and Kiev, Ukraine. And we were sort of nervous because we had never been there. And we didn't really know we called ground team. The ground team we didn't know very well. And so you never know, like you're going to show up and they put you in some freezing place with no food and, you know, it happens. So we were like, oh, this is going to be a rough trip. And we were getting used to it. And we got to Kiev. They said, well, you have to have a lunch meeting, you know, before the talk. And I'm like, with whom, you know? And they said, these guys are from Ural, it's called Uralsib. It's a Russian conglomerate, or whatever you call it. It's a Russian company. So they said they helped sponsor the thing, you have to have lunch with them. You know? So I'm like, go to this restaurant, and it's like, Kiev is full of mafia restaurants, and, you know, and it's like very slick and, you know, one dinner costs 2 weeks' pay. So, you know, we went in there and we got our private room. And there's these guys, these big corporate guys from Uralsib, you know. And I'm like, you know, well, tell me about your company, you know. And they're like, you don't know Uralsib? And I'm like, no, are you from Uralsib? And I've like, been there like, Uralsib is the biggest corporation in the world, you know, and I'm like, oh, really? We have 30,000 workers. We own all the banks in Russia. We own the petroleum production in Russia. You know, we are, people know about us usually. Okay, you know, and then, so I put on my corporate thing, you know, and I'm like, okay, what, tell me about your profits and your budgets and, you know, and then the weirdest thing happened, a really strange thing happened. You know, I said, tell me about your, you know, what do you want to achieve in your profits and how do you want to reorganize your company and what kind of, you know, contract disputes are you having or anything like that, you know? And then they're like, there's this guy, he turns out to run all of their real estate operations in the world, thousands and thousands of buildings and banks, you know? And I'm like, hi, you know? And he's like, you don't know me? I'm like, no, sorry, no. He like throws all these cards at me, and then I'm like, so, you know, what can I do for you? You know, he's like, in Erlal Zid, we are required to read your book for the last 5 years. You know, all Erlal Zid employees are required to read Dan Carter in Russian. I said, God, that's a lot of copies. And it's all black market. I never saw a penny. We understand the book and we're using the book, you know. This is why we're so successful, you know. Now we're going global. We control the world, probably. You know, and I'm like, okay, you know. And then he said, we don't want to know from you how to make money. We finished that. We all have money, you know. All of the managers, the owner is he's a multi-billionaire. You know, we have money. We don't need money now. Now we want peace. You know, we finished with the money already. You know, we have everything. We all have Mercedes. We all fly to Paris for vacations. You know, now we want peace. And he was really beautiful. He said, mainly we want peace for our children. You know, we want to know, can you teach us how to bring peace to our children? Because we care about, we're worried about our children. And he was beautiful. He was really beautiful. And, so then I thought, in my perception, you know, traveling constantly, the dream that we all had of, oh, you know, we can change the world or something like that, is happening, you know, in a very, very unexpectedly quickly. You know, like people are 30,000 people in a former mafioso company in Moscow that I never heard of. You know, and I'm like, you know, what's in here can be transmitted to the world at large, and they want it. You know, they really want it, and everywhere we go. More and more people come, we get constantly invitations to new countries, and we can't do it. We can't physically, we're trying, and it's crazy. You know, we're in Paris for 2 days, and then we're in Montreal for one day, and then we're in Vancouver, and it's like 30,000 miles of travel in a week, and we can't do it. You know, it's not enough people. So we need more help. So we need your Uncle Sam needs you. So then you know, I take a lot of teachers. We had like 10 really fine teachers on the last tour. And we have a list of 20 teachers for Taiwan and Singapore the next trip. And it's not enough. We don't have enough people. And then I don't want to send people who are not ready, you know? Like, I tried. We stuck in a few, like, semi-trained people. And then we had discussion groups, you know? And it was scary, you know? Like, they weren't going to worldview. They were off on, I think the euro's gonna go up. I'm like, ouch, you know? It's not the point, you know? So we need people who are trained. Desperately, we need people. There are hundreds of cities that want help. you can go to Krasnodar. I had a delegation came from Krasnodar. I said, you know, excuse me, where is Krasnodar? And they said, you don't know Krasnodar? I said, no. They said, in southern Russia, we are big city. You know, everyone reading your book there, you send team. I'm like, I don't have enough people, you know, and there's everywhere, like Lisbon, Krasnodar, and Santiago. In one day, they asked the French ambassador to Chile, the head of a business school in Lisbon, and the former Cossack warrior regiment leaders from Krasnodar, they all won this stuff here now. You know, probably have to do the Cossacks first because they're kind of more violent. And finish the courses, okay? Do the courses. Do the homework and get ready because we need you. Okay? They need you. And I need to draw from you. I need the fresh meat. You know, I need people to send on this wild to Sophia. Sophia means wisdom, right? And they were awesome. They were totally awesome. But we don't have enough people to follow up. So, and I can't send people who are not trained. And I can't send people who did the first three classes but didn't do the rest of the other seven. You know what I mean? So I'm watching Michael Moore and Bonnie Moore and Charest. I contact them and I say, who's done the courses? And they say, the people traveling with you haven't done the courses. And I'm like, you gotta finish the courses, okay? And you gotta do the homeworks and you gotta do the courses. You got to. And I'm not gonna take people who don't. And I need people. We need desperately need people, okay? So, try, okay? Do this homeworks. It takes like what? It's stupid. It takes like half an hour. Just write anything, you'll pass. You know? Copy in part of this week's Time magazine and see if anyone notices. Yeah, it's okay. So, they need you. Everyone, everywhere, there. But, you know, the mafia in Russia is dying for you. And, no, really. And the fact that you could change 30,000 people in a couple of weeks, that's pretty cool. Think about it. Okay? That's what you're here for. Okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to review the first class that we had. But I think first I'd like to do another meditation. I'm going to do more meditations than last time. Okay? Mm-hmm. We'll do a bunch of small meditations during the day. So it's time to do another meditation. Sit up straight. Close your eyes. Come to your breath.
feel like you just simply, quietly, in a relaxed way, examine why you came here to this retreat for these 10 days. And I'd like you to mosey on around the idea that you could learn something here that develops you internally and in your knowledge, but mostly in your heart, that could actually, in a short time, become vital and life-saving to people around the globe. Imagine that what you learned here this week would enable you to save people's lives around the entire world. So spend some time with that thought and that vision of yourself. Please come back to your breath. And slowly open your eyes.
stretch. I'd like you to keep drinking a lot during these classes, so we're importing some bottles of water, but they're not here yet. Normally in a class, we don't encourage eating or drinking, but you're new to this part of the world. It's very dry, and you will learn better if you keep hydrated. So keep drinking, okay? Anybody need a cup of water? Okay. Share what you have, and then we're ordering some bottled water. Okay. All right, we got to cruise through here kind of fast. Let's see my clock. Yeah. I'm going to cover quickly the items on the first homework that some of you may not have done. And now that you're all excited about finishing the whole course, it would be a shame if I didn't cover all of them. So the very first thing is the title of the book. That I had embarrassing situations in India where I didn't know the book I was studying, and I was asked by His Holiness' senior tutor. And it was a bad minute of my life. So you should know the name of the book that you're studying. I say Namdo Lakchan. Namdo Lakchan. Namdo means, Namadrola means vimukti, right? It means liberation. Liberation. You should take notes, okay? I get frustrated when people don't take notes. Alright, Namdo means, you've got a notebook, it has paper in it, okay? You're all set up. You got pens, you got hands. Namdo means liberation. Lak means hand, lakpa, okay? Chang means, to trust a gift into somebody's hand. So the name of this book is A Gift of Liberation Thrust Into Your Hands. It's like you're just standing on a street corner minding your own business, and some lama walks by and shoves liberation into your hand. And you're like, oh, but what's that? And then you're like, cool. And so the implication is that even if you don't do much work, you're going to get liberation. You know, like they just shove it in your hands. So I don't like the other translations, liberation in the palm of your hand or something like that. It doesn't, right? The idea is if someone's like, here, take it, you know, and they jam it into your hands. Liberation jammed into your hands. Okay? That's the meaning of the title. I'm going to read you the whole title. Namdo Lakchan Sukdupte Mengang Sammol Sanglama Norma Tsungne Chiki Gyabo Tuchu Chanchu Nage Rinpe Nyamchi Ki Sinti Singapun Ki. So the technically the name of the book is, you don't have to, I mean, I'm just going to go over each piece of the long title. Every Tibetan book has a long title and a short title. So you don't, somebody says what you're studying, you don't have to say Namdo Lakchan Sukdupte Mengang Sammol Norma. You don't have to do that. You can just say Namdo Lakchan. But there's a long title and it has an important meaning. First of all, it's called Dutsi Nyingbo. I mean, the main title of this book, the long title, is Dutsi Nyingbo. Dutsi means amrta. Amrta means deathless. A means not, amrta means like mortuary. Amrta means the nectar of deathlessness. Nectar itself is a Greek word for passing beyond death. Nek means death, like necrophilia. Tar means like as in Tara, or in transportation. It means to cross over. So nectar means to cross over death. And it's amrta. So the name of the book is Dutsi Nyingbo, the essence of amrta. The essential fluid of deathlessness is the name, the real name of the book. Okay, Dutsi Nyingbo. It is Namdo Lakchan Sukdupte Mengang. These are instructions which accomplish the jamming of liberation into your hands. They are subtle. They are profound. Probably meaning that they cover emptiness. And emptiness is no more mythical. You can explain emptiness to a big crowd of uncooperative Ukrainian and Russian guys in 2 days. You don't have to go to the monastery for 28 years or something. It's just that what you see around you is coming from seeds in your mind. And that's coming from how you treat other people. And that's all. So that's subtle. To understand that's the way the world works is subtle. That's profound. And that's all we do. We just go around the world teaching people that. And they it's cool because they become extremely successful and happy. You know? Sangla, Sanglama Norma means, Sang means complete, nothing was left out. There are steps to enlightenment. There are certain steps you have to take. There's an instruction manual. It's like a lawnmower manual. It has 18 things you have to do. If you don't do one of the 18 things, your lawnmower won't start. And it will be a useless hunk of metal in your front yard. Okay? And liberation is the same. There are certain steps you have to take. They have to be in the right order, and you have to do all of them. Sang means they're all here. Manorwa means nobody screwed them up. Okay? Like, they are pure. They are authentic. Nobody added, like, some dumb thing that you don't need to start your lawnmower. Okay? Or that's wrong. So, it's Manorwa means it's all here and it's complete. And it's correct. It's authentic. Tsumeche Giyabo Tuchu. It is the heart essence of the incomparable king of the Dharma. Who would that be? Jetsukapa, okay, the teacher of the first Dharma. Who was really incomparable. And really, you know, I don't know how to say it, the Einstein of Dharma. Okay? Unmatched. Nobody comes close. And just practical stuff you can take to Bulgaria, and in 2 days everybody's like, life has suddenly changed. Okay? It's cool. Chanchu Nagarimba, these are the steps of the path to enlightenment. Okay? You should know that Lam Rim, say Lam Rim. It's like one of the only words in Tibetan that's easy to pronounce. Lam means path. Rim means step. So Lam Rim means steps of the path. It has two distinct and completely different meanings. Lam Rim means a type of literature which gives you all the steps to enlightenment. So you can say, what kind of book are you reading nowadays? You say it's a Lam Rim text. Well, what kind of meditations are you doing? I'm doing Lam Rim meditations. That's like a generic term, genre, right? Then Lam Ki Rimba means each one of the steps is also called Lam Rim. The whole thing is called Lam Rim, and each step is called Lam Rim. The first step of all Lam Rim is how to find it, your heart teacher and how to serve them. And that's the first Lam Rim of the Lam Rim. Got it? And then the second Lam Rim is something else. Like that, alright? Lam Ki Rimba. Nyan Chi means a teaching based on someone's personal experience. So Pabongka Rinpoche, who was the teacher of the teacher of the present Dalai Lama, and who was the teacher of the teacher, teacher of the teacher of my teacher's teacher. He gave this teaching based on his own personal experience. So he went through the traditional Lama, but he threw in a lot of his personal experience, which is called a Nyamti. He's Sinti. Sinti means notes. Somebody took notes. These are the notes of the 24 days of teaching in Tibet. I think it's 1921. Sinti Sumrab Kungi Chudu. Inside this book, you can find the cream of 200,000 scriptures. So, you know, you can save a lot of time. It's all in here. And it was presented in the form of Damnar. Damnar means like your lama gives you... You go into the room with your lama and they say, look, you know, you've been eating too much. And you don't, they don't say it in front of everybody else. Damnar is like personal messages from your Lama. So this is a personal message from Lama. Okay, that's the whole title of the book. And that's one of your homework questions. And Chijan Rinpoche, we call him Kyabje. Kyabje is a name for a high Lama, especially for one of the tutors of the Dalai Lama at any given time. So in our current historical setting, His Holiness, the current Dalai Lama, had two tutors, Kyabje Ling Rinpoche and Kyabje Chijan Rinpoche. Kyabje Ling Rinpoche made it to America. I was his driver for a while. He gave us Yamantaka. It was far out. Chijan Rinpoche passed away in 1981, and he was my teacher's teacher. He was my teacher's heart teacher. So he spent a large part of his life making this book. And then I believe the karma of making this book, there were, in Lhasa alone, there were 30,000 monks who, you know, any of whom might have been qualified to some extent to teach the Dalai Lama. He was chosen out of 30,000 monks to be the Dalai Lama's teacher. I think because of the karma of serving his own teacher. He could have been famous on his own, and he was later, but he chose to devote his time to creating this record of his teachers, spending many years of his life. And I think the karma of that is he became the teacher of the Dalai Lama. Then he explains something about the teaching that they went to. What I wanted to skip to was, and it's a homework question. It's somewhere here. Yeah, I like this part. He talks about the style with which Pamoka Rinpoche delivered this teaching, and I like it. And I think it's something we should learn. Okay? So you're going to end up in some obscure village in Bulgaria as the DPI rep. And these are some clues about how you should teach, okay? And this is how I'd like to see you teach. Pamoka Rinpoche was very unusual. He broke out of the monastic mold, and he took the Dharma to the people of Tibet. See, normally the monks studied in their walled monasteries. They rarely saw the lay people. They got very ivory tower. They would discuss small points, fine points of philosophy. And then right outside the wall, in their fields, the peasants would be laboring, and they were never taught anything, and they never went to school. And the fields were owned by the monasteries, and they would just work all day, and then they would come home and eat a little bit, and then go back the next day and work. And that's why there was a communist revolution in Tibet. So Pamoka Rinpoche broke out of that mold, and he tried to bring the Dharma to the people, and he got in trouble for it. He was criticized. But Chijan Rinpoche, at the very beginning, speaks a little bit about his style, about Pamoka Rinpoche's style, and I kind of like it. Denaki kap dunki chashe verene kyan sunje ki pe. He would always use stories of real life. When he taught, he wouldn't just sit there and say, this is the first Lamrim, this is the second Lamrim. He's constantly going off on stories about this naughty monk, or this government official who's corrupt, or, you know, he would go off on these really fun stories. And we're going to do a lot of them. Like, we'll talk about a lot of the stories. I like the stories. I think you remember things better with stories. Like, if you can imagine sitting in a mafia restaurant in Kiev with a slick, silk-suited, you know, mafioso oil tycoon from Moscow, and he's crying and asking for peace for his children, you know, like, that's, it stays in your head. You know, I could say, oh, you know, you should bring, you know, but it's a real picture, and it happened, you know, and he was there. And it's more powerful, I think. So in your teaching, give some, and you're going to be different. Your life experiences are different. And those are valuable to the people you teach. They want to know real experiences from your life. They don't want you to just sit there and repeat the text or Geshe Michael's experiences. They want to know your experiences, and that makes it real for them. Dubcheki Rigpa. And he proves stuff logically. Okay? He proves stuff reasonably. So we were in Ukraine. We were in Kiev. We went on retreat. There were 50 people from Moscow, 50 people from Kiev. I don't know how they get along. I don't think it's too good, given that the Russians killed a couple million of Ukrainians. But there's a little tension in the room. And everybody's like this, you know. And they're all staring at me, you know. And then they're not read, they don't want to listen to this stuff. And then I think it's important that you just prove stuff logically to them. I mean, if you go through the pen thing, and you go through emptiness and aspirin, why aspirin doesn't work, you force them to think logically about what you're saying. Everyone responds to logic. Logic is not some stupid dry thing. Okay? What the beautiful thing about what you have to sell, I'm going to send you out to make sales jobs, right? The beautiful thing about the product I'm asking you to sell is that it makes 100% pure goddamn sense. Every detail of it makes sense. And nobody can sit there for 2 days and not get it. And by Saturday night, they're all crying. And by Sunday, all these old Russian ladies are kissing you. And, you know, these tough corporate financial heads and stuff. Really tough people. And they're all like, because there's no logical flaw in what you're presenting. It all makes perfect sense. It's perfect. The system is perfect. We may not present it very well sometimes, but it's logical. You explain for 2 days to any human being who has two legs and two arms, mostly. And they'll get it, because it just makes sense. And it explains everything in the world. And then you can try it and you get what you want. And it's just cool. And so he used, don't be ashamed to use proof stuff to them. That's, you say, you know, I always start with the pen thing. And then ever after that, they can't give me any kind of crap. You know, I can just say, look, I pull out the pen and I wave it in your face, and the pen. And they're like, oh yeah, I agreed to that already. You know, I agreed that it was coming from me. You know, I make them hold up their hand, right? Nowadays on the tours, I say, hold up your hand. At a certain point, logic, I say, okay, is it coming from you or is it coming from its own side? And you know, 300 people go, even if they're like Russians, they don't want to be there. They have to go. You know? And then after that, you got them. You know, and they come and they say, I hate my husband. You know? I said, why? I'm criticizing me all the time. Then I just. You know? And then they just shut up. And then they start having a better marriage. You know? And then you gave them something. So logic is good. Logic is beautiful. Prove stuff. Mozart went down to you. Tell wild stories. I'm good at that. Like, tell funny stories and amazing stories, okay? You can tell them, like, stories about the lady who made $1 billion, or the lady who found the story about how Jessica Kuhn found Stefan gets elaborated every time you tell it, and now it's this beautiful thing. Okay, Yi Che Pei Nung. Know your scripture and be able to pull it out when you need it. ACI course number 6. Homework number 6. Question number 3. Directly quoted from the Nyingma Cutter Sutra. Jingang Jing says so, baby. It's right here, you know? Are you from Shanghai or not? They're like, yeah, okay, so you're Chinese, right? Yeah. So it's Ching Kan Jing. What do you want? I didn't make it up, but the Buddha said. And then you pull out the scripture and you say, this is it. This is what they said. Marikpa me, marikpa sepa mepe negashi negashi sepa padayamedo. Wu ming, I wu ming jin. Naiji wu la su, I wu la su jin. The Heart Sutra said it, I didn't say it. What applies to the pen applies to your mortality. I didn't make it up, Buddha said it. You know, in Sanskrit, Chinese, Tibetan. But you gotta know your stuff. You gotta be able to pull it out when some lady from the restaurant in New York in Chinatown is asking you about the stuff, and you just pull out the Heart Sutra, and he says, I didn't say it, Naiji wu la su. He wu la su jin. I didn't make it up. And then you're there, okay, but you gotta work hard. And you gotta, at least you gotta do the courses. Okay? You gotta know your stuff. How's my clock? Yeah, okay. I'm trying to do everything on time, okay? Which is very refreshingly different. And that means you gotta be here on time for things, okay? And I'll do it too, okay? Yichimizan Chepin Yikin Mengaki Gin. And then he topped it off. He put on the icing. What do you call it? He put the icing on the cake by giving us very private and personal instructions from the oral lineage. Okay, things that were never written down, that have been passed on from lama to lama. You know, like stuff that Alistair said to you one day in a class after the class. You know, like you had your class in Costa Rica or wherever it is, in the restaurant, and then you were all hanging out afterwards, and he said some things when we were hanging out in the restaurant after the class one day, and you quote the oral tradition, you know, and it's not stuff anyone's ever going to write down. But that means you have to have an oral tradition. That means you have to have been to a lot of classes.
Again?
Again means to ornament. Like, if you're already dressed up to go out, and then you put on a fur coat, that's like a gyan. Gyan, alankara. Alan means ready. Kara means to make. Alankara is the Sanskrit word for gyan. Alankara means to doll yourself up before you go out. So gyan means that. It means the finishing touch is what Alistair said in the restaurant one day when we were all hanging out after class. The finishing touch, which is maybe the most important and the sweetest touch, right, is this is what my teacher told me in Howard Johnson's at the Delaware Bridge in 1982, you know? And you know, like that. You need oral tradition from your teachers. They done boa nan ma kod de. He was careful to fit the teaching to the people in the audience who were beginners. He was careful to make it, what do you call it, to adjust the level to the audience. So you will find, as a teacher, that you go into, I was in Singapore, and we advertised it as a Heart Sutra, you know, in-depth Heart Sutra. 600 people showed up at the Trade Union Hall. And I got up there and I saw 300 of them that weren't ready. That was the first time they ever came to a class. Well, I'm going to go off on the 5 points of emptiness to these 300 people. So I dumped it down. I went straight down. In 5 minutes, I went down. You know? Then all the older students were like, okay, Geshe Lama, next time you come to Singapore, we need a real Heart Sutra class. You know, so you gotta take it to the level of the people. Deshin, Ram Ding Tamasungi Lord Tsamba. But you're still gonna have to satisfy the people who have heard all that stuff before and need something higher. You have to satisfy both. You have to satisfy the new people. You have to come down to the level of the new people, but you have to keep feeding the older people more stuff that makes their presentation more sophisticated. So it's difficult if there's 300 new people and 300 people have been studying for 5 years. But he had that skill. He could do it. Okay. Nyam Nyong Gyu talked to Kelma. Nyamnyam Gyuk taught Kelwa. He taught it in such a way that he was constantly asking you to apply it to your own circumstance. So like this whole week, we're going to be talking mainly about the life of Atisha, Lord Atisha, who brought the Lamrim to Tibet. Okay, he brought the Lamrim to Tibet. And we're going to spend days and days on the history of his life. You know, like how he took his sea voyage to Indonesia. You know, how the Tibetan king died to try to get Atisha to Tibet. You know, steal him from the abbot of Vikramashila Monastery. Okay, like this, okay? So, then Pavong Gurmache teaches something like that in such a way that he is demanding that you apply it to your own life. Okay? Like, okay, so some guy 1,000 years ago made a sea voyage to Indonesia to pick up a few lines of Lojong. Okay? Risked his life many times to get a few lines of Lojong, you know. Well, maybe we could put up with some lousy mattresses. You know? You know what I mean? Like, he's always like, apply it right away. A boat in 1000 AD was 8 logs strapped together, okay? He went from India to Indonesia on 8 logs strapped together. You know? Probably it was a little less comfortable than these mattresses, I would guess. I saw the carving in Indonesia of the boat. It's carved on the panel at Borobudur. I saw Atisha's boat. It was 8 logs strapped together. I'm sure it was a little harder than... Probably you'd rather have hard than those bowls. But anyway, okay. Kelly, Yiku Lashi. After listening to him, we found it easy to be inspired to try to do something ourselves. Lashin, Semla Pemba, he didn't say anything that he hadn't thought about carefully. My Lama, okay? My heart Lama. She's always, I always ask her, you know, what should I do tomorrow? What should I emphasize? You know? She's always the same answer. Yeah. And it's, before you get up there, think about what would help them. You know? And that's different, right? Like, oh, I wanted to teach this obscure emptiness thing. And she's like, yeah, but will that help them? You know? Like, you're supposed to get up and... Before you get up to talk, think about what will help those people. You know? What will help their mind? And then say what will help their life. Okay, so I guess that's the last thing you mentioned, Semla Pemba. Oh no, it's not the last thing. Say something that will help their life, okay? And continually examine as a teacher if you are saying stuff that helps people's lives. Or are you just repeating some obscure book, you know, that you heard, you know, okay? I always laugh when I read this. I was in the car yesterday, and whenever I read this line, I start laughing. When we started to get sleepy and spacing out, he would tell a joke and make everybody roar with laughter. Chinga Choa. Okay? Nimuk. He would like... tell a really good joke and get everybody refreshed. Okay? I think it's so important. Like, we were in Toronto and this newspaper came and they did like almost a full page article about the talk. But what impressed them was that everybody was laughing and smiling. They kept mentioning everybody in the audience was laughing and smiling and the teachers were laughing and smiling and this is what they thought was important, the Toronto Star. And I liked that. I was proud of our group and I was proud of our class because a newspaper reporter, what struck them was that everyone was having a good time. And if your class is not fun, then I think it's kind of, what did Dharma just say? No, no pain, no gain, no fun, no yoga. Yeah, he goes, he tells it like very dramatically. He goes, no pain. He's got you in some pose and you're dying, you know. And he says, no pain, no gain, you know. And then he waits, he pauses, and then he says, no fun, no yoga. And then he does some silly thing with you, you know. And so if you're not having a good time, I think it's all suspicious. The whole class is suspicious, the teaching is suspicious, the presentation is suspicious. We were in Kiev, and the teachers on tour are required to have their own yoga class. So one of the teachers teaches the other teachers, after all the teachers have taught the yoga. Because what happens as a teacher is you start teaching and you stop doing. You know, you said, did you do your yoga today? I taught a class. No, but did you do your yoga today? No. I was too busy, I taught a class. Well, how can you be a teacher and you don't do your yoga? You know, how can you teach yoga without teaching, without doing it every day? So then we had a yoga class with the teachers. Ningbo taught the class. So then some really tough Russian guy, you didn't see him. He wandered into the room and he saw the class and he sat down in the corner. So Ningbo's up there and he's looking, 100 jumping jacks. We're all like, what? And he's like, 100 jumping jacks. And we're all like, oh God, this is some Ohio State football team. You know? And then we're all like, we stopped at like 60 and started joking around. And he's like, okay, karate kicks. Everybody kick their neighbor. You know? And we're all roaring, and this Russian guy, he's really grumpy old guy. He's like, you know, and I felt this thing like he got turned on because he saw we were having fun. So if you're not having fun, like who wants to study what you know if you're not having fun? I mean, if you're like this grumpy person and you know the secrets of the universe. Okay. I got one. Okay, I'm being responsible. Rengadur Choen Huji. Oh, and then sometimes he made us cry. Uncontrollably. Wang Me Du Jin. The tears flowed uncontrollably. We couldn't stop. Shen Dar Tu Jixin. Then at other times, he scared the poop out of us. Like he started describing the hell realms or death or, you know, he had this ability to scare the poop out of you too. That's all. Okay? So, then the purpose of this retreat, special purpose of this retreat, it's threefold. You can say there are three things we're trying to accomplish this week. Number one, what is the big picture in your life? What is it you would like to put energy into? You know, what is it that you really want in your whole life to accomplish? You know, what is it you want on your gravestone or your enlightenment stone or whatever? What are they going to write on your gravestone? Is it, you know, this person accomplished this in their life, you know? Rob Haggerty built the Mission de la Haggerty. Yardin? You know? And then, you know, what's the big thing you want to do in your life? I mean, in this week, you got to figure it out, okay? Have some kind of less fuzzy picture about what you want to do with your life in a big way. Where do you want to put your energy? What's the one big thing you want to accomplish in your life? What do you want to do with your life? It can be two, okay? But it's got to be at least something. That's first thing. Second thing, what are the short-term things you need to do to get there? You know, like, I'm going to have to finish my homeworks if I want to be the greatest teacher in Krasnodar. You know? Like, the short-term tasks that you have trouble finishing or getting to. Okay? Like, I know, Geshe-la, you asked me 38 times to finish my homeworks. You know, since 1998, you've told me to finish my homeworks. But, I just can't get around to it, or I start and I stop, and I don't feel the energy to do it. I don't feel the energy to do it. So, what's the big picture? Where are you going to put the energy of your entire life? What's the smaller components? What kind of energy do you need? What short-term stuff do you need to get done? I got to feed myself, I need a house, I got to take care of my cat. I got to finish grading homeworks. So I got to keep the, you know, what are the short-term stuff you got to do? Then the first thing to supply that, where am I going to get that personal energy? I'm losing energy. I don't have energy. You know, I sleep a lot. I watch TV. I'm on the internet all day. I'm looking at stupid, useless things that I don't really need to look at. I don't have energy, you know? Like, I get tired easily. I start yoga, then I feel like I can't do yoga. You know, I eat too much. I feel indolent. You know, I just don't have pizzazz. You know, so how do I get that? So I'd say those are the three goals for this week. On an immediate level, how do I have more energy? You know, like, and what's keeping me from having more energy? How can I get more energy? Second, what are the immediate things in my life I gotta put that energy into? And then thirdly, how is that all gonna contribute to the big goal of my life? And how do I identify that goal? How do I know, you know, is it Krasnodar or is it Lisbon? You know, where am I gonna go? What am I supposed to do? Like that, alright? That's what we're gonna do this week. Okay. Mm-hmm.